This is Chris Collinsworth. Be sure to check out the PFF NFL podcast as our experts provide insight on all the league's top stories. Every game, every player, every play. Download and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite provider.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Fantasy Slant, powered by Pro Football Focus. I'm your usual host, Michael Moore, along with our usual preview, hosts Brandon Marion Lee and Dan Schneier. We are recording during Game 7 of the World Series, which should show you how much dedication we have. Although, to be honest with both of you, I definitely was watching Westworld before this, and I definitely watched it last night during Game 6. So don't at me when you listen to this. So. But I will watch the end of it. I will watch the end of it no matter what. So did you two watch it last night, or am I the only one that did that?
I watched part of it. I had another interview for like half of it. So, but yeah, you know, I watched the end to make sure that it all went down. I thought it was a little weird that everyone was like, oh, I guess it's definitely over when he hit the grand slam. I was like, there are a lot of innings left.
No, that was me. Because I saw it on Twitter, and it's an Addison Russell grand slam. I'm like, oh, well, I don't need to watch it anymore.
So, well, yeah. That ended up being true, but I got nervous. I was like, well, yeah. Gee.
Dan, yeah, what about you?
That was me, too. I quit at 7-0 because I wanted to watch the World Series of Poker Final Table, which was pretty exciting for a poker team like myself.
So it, I was also, like, it also was probably more exciting than the game last night. So.
Right. I mean, at 7-0, you kind of know where it's going. And I also do have the luxury in my apartment. I have set up a little bit of a 2-TV setup where I have one TV atop of the other. So I did have it on the bottom screen, just no sound.
Nice. See, you're doing it right, Dan. Good for you. That's how you should do it. Anyway, all right. So we will get to some news and notes, mainly injury news on this episode. A little later, Jeff Ratcliffe will talk to NFL Network's Dave Damaschek. In an interview, and then we will look at your best and worst matchups for DFS this week. But first, let's get to the bad news, injury news first. So the Chiefs, well, I mean, besides their quarterback, Alex Smith, definitely not playing this week with Nick Foles starting. Also, probably the more important fantasy news for everyone, Spencer Ware did not practice today, still in concussion protocol. Charkhandrick West does look like he will be the bell cow on Sunday. Dan, where do we put West? He's playing a Jags defense that, you know, quite honestly, plays fantasy running backs not bad.
Yeah, we've talked about this before. The Jags defense is not that bad this year. Like you said, they play fantasy running backs well. They're middle of the pack as far as our ratings go. They were in the top 10 for a while, dropped out. But at the same time, we've seen in the past that Spencer Ware, Jamal Charles, whoever the Chiefs really throw back there in that role, ends up getting close to 80-85% of the touches. They really like to work with one running back, and it's really hard to pass up on that kind of volume this week. I will say this about West: if Ware is ruled out, and I think he will be, West is going to have super high ownership in daily fantasy, so he becomes kind of only a cash game only play. And I think if somebody could present to me a strong enough take for why it's just too bad of a matchup to play Charkhandrick West, it might make sense to just fade him, because you're just going to gain such an advantage on the field that is going to use him nonstop because his price is so low.
Brandon, what do you think? Are you fading West, or are you going with him?
I mean, I'm diversifying. Let me tell you, because okay. Spencer Ware killed my entire FanDuel lineup. Got hurt last week. They all left the game. Ware, Booker, Hilton, Julio. I mean, I don't even know where to go.
I was going to say, are we going to see another Devontae Booker where he has like 95% ownership this week?
The thing with Booker, oh, you're saying with West, right?
Sorry. Yeah.
I mean, it just is. So I guess this is my thing about the Jaguars. You're right. They used to be in the top 10. They were doing a really good job. And, you know, they did allow over 100 yards and a touchdown to Melvin Gordon early in the season. But then they faced people like Eddie Lacy, who, you know, had some issues, Terrence West, Frank Gore, who's just – always, you know,
don't
even keel.
Frank Gore, Brandon. Don't,
but there's no up. Ceiling. It's just even okay. Keel. Even right. Solid RB2 flex numbers. But he's never going to break through, right? Just never going to get that 100-yard game. Never going to have multiple touchdowns. Just even, right? And then there was Jordan Howard from Chicago who did score a touchdown, but it was only 34 yards, right? It was that weird game after the Jaguars bye. But since then, Latavius Murray scored two touchdowns on them. Both DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry had touchdowns on them last week, and they totaled 183 yards together on the ground alone, over 200 if you put in their receiving yards. Since their bye week, they've fallen off a cliff. Now, unless replacing their offensive coordinator is going to rejuvenate that run defense, I don't think it's that bad of a matchup, especially if you're going to get 95% of the carries. I mean, how many running backs are getting that anymore?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just going to be a matter of if you want to risk the chalk play, right? Like, he's going to be a big waiver wire addition in redraft leagues, and he's going to be highly owned just because he's cheap and you know he's going to be the bell cow. So it's just a matter of, hey, do you want to roll with that? All right, another running back situation this weekend in Tampa, where they are on their fourth starting running back for the season after Doug Martin, after Charles Sims, and after Jaquizz Rodgers teased all of us with his good couple of weeks. Then he got injured. So now it looks like Dan Antone Smith will be the lead back. I don't know. Is there anything there? He plays Atlanta, who gives up the fifth most fantasy points to running backs. But again, he's literally the fourth running back on the depth chart. So do we trust him this week?
Yeah, I mean, and you can count me as somebody who was definitely surprised last week when Jaquizz went down and Smith saw 22 total snaps and Peyton Barber only saw 3. I didn't see that coming, but again, remember, Smith was that guy who was actually on the Falcons a couple years ago, or maybe it was like 3 or 4 by now, and he had a lot of burst. He had a lot of surprising juice. He got a couple injuries, kind of derailed his career. And now he's landed once again with the Bucs. And I actually like him this week as somebody, like, if you're pressed, hard pressed on the wire, you need somebody to fill that flex. You need somebody to fill that RB2. Again, we have a lot of bye weeks this week, so it makes sense. You're going to get somebody who, one, is in a matchup that's going to be have a lot of offensive plays. Both of these teams run at a very fast pace. Two, you're going to have a matchup that's on that Thursday night slate, so you know that you know what you're going to get ahead of time. You know you can kind of maneuver the rest of your lineups if you need a high floor, if you need a high ceiling, depending on how well he does. And then three, you're going to get a guy who's in an offense, like you said, who can definitely move the ball on the ground against this Falcons defense. They play that funnel style, that Seahawks style. It's not working too well for them because they don't have the same kind of talent the Seahawks have or had at this point. And I think that it's really just a great matchup with a chance for a lot of offensive plays. And honestly, I mean, it's a risk because who knows if they look at the tape and say, okay, we're going to play Peyton Barber instead this week. But at the same time, these are the type of times you want to take. These are the type of weeks, I should say, you want to take these risks.
Well, yeah, and I think the other thing to remember is if they get down early or it's a shootout, it's not like they're going to be running the ball against Atlanta. I mean, they could be passing it, and you could have a Brandon special Jameis game with 4 touchdowns, you know. So, speaking of
Ola Wally.
There you go. Yeah.
So someone's going to ruin our lives.
Yeah, I know. And if we knew it, believe me, we'd all be winning the lottery.
You know what I do want to – I want to chime in on this, though, because, you know what, 2 years ago, Antoine Smith, remember he was averaging like 60-some yards per carry for a while there? Remember how crazy that was when he was in Atlanta Falcons? He had a 59.7 breakaway percentage here on Pro Football Focus, which is just absurd. Now, he only had 23 attempts. But –
That is the definition of small sample size. Though.
Yeah, it was right. But if you want someone who's just going to like break away and maybe have a 60-yard run and a touchdown, I think Antoine Smith probably has the best chance out of anyone here to do that, right? And Peyton Barber has 0 catches on the season. If you're in a PPR league, that's something to take note of. 0 targets, 0 catches. Nada.
Well, look, and I never thought I'd say this, but it could be the Antoine Smith revenge game that we, you know, didn't see coming. So.
We all knew that was coming, though. We had that marked on our calendars, right?
Right. All right. So speaking of injuries, Brandon, and I know you had an article on Pro Football Focus talking about some gimpy players and what to do with them. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that, like guys like Russ Wilson, DeMarco Murray, Devontae Booker, et cetera.
Yeah. Oh man. I mean, in the nicest way possible, you cannot start Russell Wilson. And I don't know. I started writing about this in week one. I had a bigger article in week two. So then this week I just decided to go all out. I was like, no, you guys, half of my article is going to be dedicated to this one player and how he's affecting all of your other fantasy prospects. So the problem is that obviously the pectoral muscle, injury was serious, right? On top of that, the injured knee, the injured ankle, you know, things that can be on the injury list or not. But the whole plain fact of the matter is that the entire man is beat up right now. I'm trying to pull up my thing, which of course I just love it when I like have something to say that my computer goes like this.
But it's the human element, Brandon. It shows that we're all in this together.
Yeah, right? You're like, oh man, Brandon. Okay, so the thing is that right now, Drew Brees and Eli Manning have used play action more than Russell Wilson this season. Yeah, Drew Brees.
I also saw a stat, and you may be going with this. So I believe Matt Ryan, who himself not a runner, actually has more rushing yards than Russell Wilson on the season this year.
Yes, he does.
Sad slash incredible. So.
Oh, it's unreal. I mean, the thing is that it used to be that, you know, play action was kind of like his big thing, right? He also, you know, he is accurate under duress. He still has a 73.3 accuracy percentage when it comes to being under pressure. It's just that he's not attempting anything. Nothing's really happening. It's just plays are disintegrating before they start because he just can't move. If you add to that the offensive line issues, it's just, yeah, it's bad. So it used to be that he used to use play action on 30.8% of his dropbacks in 2014, which was the second most in the league. Then it went to 24.3 last year, which was the sixth most. This year it's 14.6, which is the 25th most. They have had to rearrange their entire playbook based off of his injuries. So that's a big warning flag moving forward.
Yeah, and just some Russ Wilson stats for you. So he is still averaging 258 yards a game, so not bad. Probably won't clear 4,000. At least he's not on pace for that. But yardage was never his thing, right? Like, he was never going to throw for 5,000 yards. So that's not really that surprising. But the touchdowns, the passing touchdowns, he has 5 on the year in 7 games. And 3 of those came in 1 game against the Jets. It's really bad. Like, I don't think I know you have been sounding this alarm, Brandon, but I think for a lot of people, they didn't realize how bad it was. And he plays a Buffalo team this weekend, which, again, they've given up the third least amount of points to fantasy quarterbacks this year. So
zero touchdowns since week 4. Zero. Yeah, that means zero touchdowns for everyone else.
Yeah, I know. I didn't think I would ever see the day. So, all right, another gimpy player, Dan, I know you have talked about DeMarco Murray on Pro Football Focus. So what's the deal with him? I mean, he's got the toe injury. Should we be targeting Derrick Henry? What should we do?
Yeah, I think this is a classic case of fantasy recency bias. Just a, you know, a 2 years ago, I guess it was 3 years ago before the 2014 season, Murray was viewed as one of probably the most injury prone players in the NFL. He had been injured. His injuries actually date all the way back to his days at Oklahoma. He dealt with a lot of injuries there, and I actually read a little further into this, and he was kind of one of those high school players who also couldn't even make it through, and then got to the Cowboys. Leading up to that 2014 breakout season, Murray had 3 years that were kind of could be considered injury prone. He didn't play in 16 games any of those years. He had 10 games one of those years. He had 13 and 14 the other two, but he had a lot of those games where he was playing through an injury. And I think now we look at it, and we look at it as a guy who's you know, avoided the injury bug as of the past 2 or 3 seasons, but he now has this toe injury. And again, he's had these injuries in his career. And what we see here is like a super great opportunity, in my opinion, to buy really low on Derrick Henry. Obviously, he had the big game last week and he kind of showed on national TV what he's capable of. But that hasn't really changed his value because Murray's been such a workhorse. But to me, like, you have a chance here to hit a potential home run pick, the guy who can potentially win you your fantasy league this year in Derrick Henry. To me, he came out into the NFL. A lot of people compared him to Brandon Jacobs. But come on, Brandon Jacobs couldn't catch passes like Derrick Henry. And he did not have the lateral agility that Henry has. Henry so far this season actually has the third best elusive rating among active running backs that have seen at least 25% of their carries. Only Jay Ajayi and Jordan Howard have a better elusive rating. And their elusive rating is kind of what's the word I'm looking for, propped up by the fact that they create a lot of yards after contact. What Henry does best is force missed tackles. He has 18 forced missed tackles on just 62 total touches this season, which is unbelievable. There are 27 backs, let's say, with a higher yards per carry, yards after contact per attempt, I should say, and that shows you how elite Henry is in the open field. So, again, we're talking about somebody who's in a situation where the starter already has an injury, has a lengthy injury history, and he's an elite talent. This is a guy that I'm going all in on here.
Well, and one note on Henry, Dan, that I like personally, I mean, we all remember he racked up 400 carries last year at Alabama. Like an insane number. And like you said, he only has 62 touches this year. So, look, I mean, it's not great if you went all in on Henry, you know, thinking he might overtake Murray early on. But, look, for his long-term value, I think it's great that he only has 62 touches so far and probably won't see 150 on the season, you know, assuming DeMarco, you know, doesn't get injured for an extended amount of time. So
He doesn't have breakaway potential, though, just to FYI. He's only had, like, two breakaway runs. He has a 16.7% breakaway percentage. So he's not going to get you the big plays. So you're going to need volume if you want points. And he needs to be on the field. So, again, Murray has to be out. He's doing a good job, you know, against, you know, when he gets contact, but he's not going to go in for a couple plays and get you the points that you need. So to me, this is incredibly injury dependent. Obviously, the Jaguars just imploded. I mean, what can we say about last week? But prior to that, his points are where his points are if Murray's on the field. So yeah, the injury changes everything, but I would keep an eye on it because he's just doesn't have big playability, which I think is where the Brandon Jacobs, which by the way, very sad. I would never do that to him, but that's probably where that comes from, right? Is that he's not a guy who's going to just break away and make some huge play happen to get you points. He only has 37 total yards on plays that are for 15 or more yards. So that means he just barely got two. You know, I mean, that's how math works. So, that's the only part that I would participate in. Again, love the talent, Dynasty League, I'm all in, but I'm a little nervous because they love DeMarco Murray there. They're obsessed with him.
And to that point, Brandon, they're still in the division race. They're only one game back, which means mm-hmm. it's not like they're going to go on, you know, okay, let's just throw the young guys out there now.
Check out our talent. Done. Yeah, right. No, they're probably going to go to the playoffs.
So
look at the rest of their division.
Yeah, but I mean, I'm with you though, Dan. If you've got a roster spot, I mean, look, you're looking for lottery tickets at this point, right? That could win you a championship. If you've got an extra bench spot, I mean, Henry's about as good a handcuff as you can get, I think. I think he may be the best one out there.
Oh, yeah. You know? I totally agree.
He's not going to be like Antoine Smith this week and put up, you know, some points in PPR leagues or catch some passes or something like that. He's not one of those like bye week fill-in type guys. He's the type of guy you pick up and you kind of, and we don't want to say root for injury because you're never doing that, but you hope that your team, I can't even say this in any
place. In the off chance that a running back gets hurt, he's a very good option.
You play the odds.
There you go.
You brought up how many injuries and how many games he had missed before, DeMarco Murray, that is. And based on the usage, I think that you can play the odds on this for sure.
Right.
That's the political way to say it, I think.
There you go.
You nailed it.
A week out from the election, I really nailed this political correctness.
I don't know what life's going to be like after it. I really don't, but...
Well, there is no life after it. Don't you know that? If you look at Twitter, it's all over, no matter what side wins.
Nuclear option. That's right. But until then, we have a special guest on this episode. Let's send it over to Jeff Radcliffe, interviewing Dave Damashek of the NFL Network.
Thanks, Michael. All right, joining me on the line, you know him from the NFL Network, the NFL.com, all the stuff he does over there. Dave Damashek. Dave is the host of Fantasy and Friends, which you can watch Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern on the NFL Network. Dave, thanks for stopping by. How you doing today, my man?
Good. Happy to talk about football right at the midway point in the season.
Yeah, it is the midway point. It's really flown by. It's hard to believe that we're coming down the home stretch of the regular season for the fantasy football season. And before we get into that, though, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about this show? I watched it. I'm a regular watcher. I really enjoy it. It's a slightly different take on things. So just a quick plug on the Fantasy and Friends show.
Yeah, it is, we try to involve the fans more is really the bottom line there. And, you know, that can be difficult some over the years. You think, you know, the old cliche, no one cares about your fantasy football team, does sort of line up with like the guys who describe their golf shots. No matter how avid a golfer you are, I don't really care how you played the 16th hole this morning. But this time, so we're really involving the fans, and they land on a lot of universal kind of questions that any fantasy player might have. So we try to focus in on that. And, you know, we also have Maurice Jones-Drew there, who most people know wasn't just a successful guy. If he was on your fantasy team, he also was playing. He really was a trailblazer in that regard, playing fantasy football while he was still in the league. And so he really is deeply into it. And we have Adam Rank, who's deeply knowledgeable on the subject. We try to involve analytics, but hopefully make it a little more fun than your standard kind of reading of, you know, power rankings in fantasy that you might see online somewhere.
Absolutely. Maurice Jones-Drew has been a great ambassador for fantasy sports. I mean, we've gone from an era 10 years ago where it was almost laughable. We were the Dungeons and Dragons of the sports world. And now we're not, and we're being embraced by a lot of folks. And certainly, you know, you've helped over the course of your career bang the drum for us. So much appreciated there. But you talk about these common questions. Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry.
I'll tell you. Well, I you know, as far as that goes, it is funny. Malcolm Jenkins is now doing something at NFL.com that is, it's called All Pro Fantasy, and it is all current players. It's you know, it's Allen Robinson and Blair Walsh and a bunch of guys who are into it with Malcolm Jenkins as the commissioner, and they basically sit around and talk fantasy football. So it really is very different. And in fact, to your point, you know, 10 years ago, yeah, you're just a fantasy guy and all of that. Now the dinosaurs who reject fantasy people are the people who are on the outside and who seem square. So it is a funny reversal of things in not very much time.
And how the industry has progressed over that span of time, I think, is so interesting for me. You know, it used to be, hey, start this guy because I say so because I work for major media company X. But now, you know, we really have to know our stuff. We really have to dive into the X's and O's. It's not just the statistics. It's actually watching the game and understanding what's happening on the field. So, yeah, I actually want to get your take here. You talk about some common questions. One of the most frequent questions I've been asked over the last week and a half or so is Ajay Ajayi for real? So what's your take on Jay Ajayi? We know the historic numbers. We don't have to rehash that. But based on his performances, based on what you see out of the Dolphins going forward, is this guy for real? Do you think fantasy owners can trust this guy going forward for the rest of the season?
The answer I give to that is yes. I think that it is not a coincidence that that offensive line has gotten healthy and rounded into shape. And furthermore, I'm a believer in Adam Gase. You look at his track record at the stops he's made. And so I do think that in spite of, you know, I think a little bit, I think sometimes, like you were saying earlier, I feel this way and that's why you should do it. I think we do get caught up in sort of this negative association with the Miami Dolphins. And you see that uniform and you think, well, this isn't going to work out. And legitimately, Ryan Tannehill is remains a conundrum. But I do buy that Adam Gase knows what he's doing. And I like with the probable exception most weeks of Ryan Tannehill, I do like Jay Ajayi, and I like the pass catchers as well in Gase's offense. I think the best is yet to come in 2016 and beyond for those Dolphins under Gase.
Yeah, and we often see this where a guy may not show his full hand until halfway through the season. So I certainly agree with you. Watching Ajayi, especially in week 7, his first step was lightning quick. He hit the ground and went. I mean, that's exactly what you need to do is in that one-cut system of Adam Gase's. So I'm with you there. But, you know, we sometimes see big performances, but maybe the players don't necessarily perform that well on the field. That's sort of my take right now in New Orleans. Last week, we saw that surprise Mark Ingram getting benched after just a few snaps into the game, and then Tim Hightower going out and putting up 100-plus yards. But I don't really see him as playing that well in that contest. I wanted to get your take here, though, because we know potential committee situations are a headache for fantasy owners. So what say you on the New Orleans Saints running backs?
Well, it's funny, you know, the broad strokes that it doesn't take anyone who's paid, you know, you don't have to pay too much attention to understand that Drew Brees is going to be throwing the ball a lot. But of course, I'll refer you all the way back to their Super Bowl year. They were a top five running offense. The bigger concern is what you say is running back by committee. I'm a pedigree snob about these kinds of things, and I suspect that Sean Payton ultimately will be with Mark Ingram. And that's a lesson. And, you know, you talk about Jay Ajayi. We've seen this in a high-profile way a few times now this season, that a guy basically gets a fire lit under him by being put to the bench unexpectedly, and then they rise up from that. I don't think that Sean Payton thinks that Tim Hightower is a better option in his offense than Mark Ingram is ultimately. And so, I am avoiding. I'm in some auction leagues as well as just straight waiver wire pickups, and I'm not going after Hightower in any of those. I think that was a flash in the pan that will not sustain itself.
Yeah, I agree with you, and I think that the cure to what ills Mark Ingram probably lies in the San Francisco 49ers defense, so we'll see what happens after that this
Well,
week.
I got Carlos Hyde, and so I'm hoping for the bounce back that way as well. Kristen Michael and the lack of touches and the lack of time that the Seahawks had with the ball there put a dent in the possibility of Michael having a big day in NOLA last Sunday. But I'm hoping Carlos Hyde can have his way a little bit too.
Well, you mentioned Kristen Michael. I want to talk about another one of the Seahawks running backs. That's my guy, CJ Procise. I've been talking about this guy since back in April, and I like that he's finally on the field. And we see it every year, Dave. We see guys who break out in the second half. I mean, who saw David Johnson coming? I mean, I guess Bruce Arians saw that coming, but we didn't as fantasy players last year. And it won a lot of folks fantasy championships. So there's a lot of these young running backs right now who are just on the cusp, potentially an injury away from having a prominent role. Do any guys stand out to you? I mean, you talk about Procise or whoever else might stand out to you.
Yeah, I hate to say Procise since you're talking him up here, and I'm not just riding your coattails on that, but I really do buy that as an interesting option there. And by the way, I do think that the Seahawks in general are going to get rolling here. I have announced in several places this week that I am not going to take the bait this year. The Seahawks in 2014, were they 4-5 after they lost in KC, I think. And then last year they lost in Arizona, and we announced that they were doomed. They ended up winning 10 games again last year. They're about to turn it around. And Russell Wilson, it all has to do with Russell. Not all, but a lot of it has to do with Russell Wilson getting that leg right. And Tom Cable, I've talked to a lot of guys, and one of whom I work with, Michael Robinson, who was with those Seahawks in their Super Bowl years, says this too. The most valuable guy in that organization is Tom Cable because of his ability to transform that offensive line. And if you notice, that is the trend. It's not like the Seahawks hit the ground dominating in September. It takes them a while to get that offensive line in shape, and I suspect they will, especially as Wilson's leg gets better, the more he can run away from pressure and make plays as he's done. So yeah, I like CJ Procise a great deal. And to your point, the guy who to me is the trailblazer for all this sort of thing is Jerry Rice. Yes, you can look back at his rookie season and see the numbers and say, wow, he had a great rookie season. But in fact, he didn't really take off until the very end of that season. So I do think that it is your point is well taken, that just because a rookie hasn't done what you expected him to do very early in his rookie season doesn't mean that he's not about to take off here in the second half of the year. I think Jay Ajayi essentially has that feel to him.
Yeah, absolutely, and I'm trying to stockpile as much of CJ Procise as possible at this point. You mentioned that offensive line. I think Jermaine Ifedi, as the season has gone on, he's really shown that he's taking steps forward. It's a rough transition for offensive linemen getting to the NFL, so definitely something to look out for there. And by the way, look out for Dave's podcast, the Dave Damashek Football Program. Fantastic podcast on records on Tuesdays and Thursdays. You can find it on NFL.com, NFL Now, YouTube, iTunes. And Dave, like you, I have also hosted a podcast with a Brit who is an NFL fanatic. So we have that in common.
Wow. How about that? That is something. Yeah, I thought I was a rarity, if not unique, for having an Englishman weigh in. And he's weirdly a Miami Dolphins lover, although not that weird. Based on when he was a kid, there was a lot of Dan Marino being pumped back to the UK there. So he has stayed true, and so he's very excited. And much to my chagrin, his Dolphins got my Steelers a couple weeks ago. But, you know, like you were saying, I do think, you know, exotic smash mouth and all that, and I whiffed on that. I just was looking at Mike Mularkey's track record and the commitment to the ground game. Is you know, I was specious about that. How if they had the pieces to get it done? I liked DeMarco Murray, but I didn't know if going all in. And really, Marcus, I felt validated because Marcus Mariota looked like he was struggling here and there. Now he looked like he got right against the Jags, but then again, that was the Jags, so we'll have to take a wait and see there. But you know, we did start to see a few touches more for Derrick Henry, and they paid off there. So maybe a guy who a lot of people were high on in August is about to take off there. But as far as that goes, now people should be aware. It's still, I don't know what the weather is by you, but it's 80 degrees and sunny in LA, and that can trip you up a little bit. But remember, as the weather gets colder, it is in fact a fact that teams are going to start to run the ball more. So go get, even if it sounds crazy and he's still hurt, but go get James Starks right now. The Packers are going to be running the ball more as the season wears on here. So guys like that in situations like that are going to be getting more and more touches here. And as offenses start to deal with the weather a little bit more, they won't be throwing it as much, especially and obviously the teams that are playing outdoors.
Yeah, absolutely. I've been talking about Starks as well. You look at that team, they're not going to use Ty Montgomery as a running back. And Nile Davis was there for all of, what, 12 days or whatever it was. So that would point to Starks possibly being back sooner than maybe that initial timeline suggested. So that's a good call. Dave, fantastic stuff. Excited to have you on here. I really appreciate you taking the time to stop by, my man.
Anytime, man. Let me know.
Absolutely. All right. Thanks. And by the way, remember, you can catch Dave's show, Fantasy and Friends, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Friday, 6 p.m. Eastern on the NFL Network. And of course, just subscribe to the podcast, DDFP. It's a fantastic show. Well worth the listen every single episode.
Much obliged, man.
Anytime, my friend. All right. There he goes. Dave Damashek. You can follow him on Twitter at Damashek. All right, let's send it back over to Michael and the podcast crew.
All right, thanks, Jeff. Good stuff there. Now, you two, let's get into our best and worst DFS matchups of the week. Let's start with the good news first. Dan, let's start with you. Who are some guys you're targeting this week?
All right, so, I mean, this one's not going to be any kind of contrarian play at all. I'm sure the ownership has a chance to reach meteoric levels here, but I'm going all in on Ezekiel Elliott. We've got the Browns on tap, and all I've been doing this season is targeting the Browns in daily fantasy. Last week, a lot of people were not on board with these Jet stacks. People didn't want to play Forte. People didn't want to play Fitzpatrick, Marshall. They kind of did all right by not playing those two, but if
you... Yeah.
But if you skipped on Forte, and then again, even against the Browns, you can see a guy like Anunua go off because, like he did, because this is a defense that's going to give up at least two weekly dominant performers every week. And just look at it. Dalton and Green the week before, even Tannehill did some work against them earlier in the season. So this week, Ezekiel Elliott comes into town, or actually, are they in Cleveland? No,
they're in Cleveland. Yeah.
Right, going into Cleveland. Place that is going to be either a little bit sad or a little bit happy, depending on the result of the game that I have no idea about right now. But no matter what, they're a terrible football team. This defense is it better than Alabama's right now? I'm not sure with all the injuries.
Oh, no.
Had.
Not the Alabama argument, Dan.
The Alabama argument.
No, oh, no. You can't do that on a legitimate podcast, man.
Okay, you're right. You can't do the Bama argument. Is it better than Bama's defense combined in the last four seasons? That might be.
All right. Now you're getting in on a technicality. I get it.
That one might be an actual argument. But the point is, this is a terrible defense. I can go into the numbers, but they're bottom three across the board for us, and they're actually currently our 27th overall defense. So just get in on this. Get Ezekiel. I don't care how high the ownership is going to be. I'm getting him in cash and tournament lineups.
Okay. Brandon, what about you? Who are some running backs you're targeting this week?
Yeah, well, as far as running backs are concerned, I want to kind of talk about Terrence West a little bit. I know.
But,
he's terrible before the bye week.
But
the Steelers gave up 127 yards and two touchdowns to Blunt before the bye, and over 200 yards and two touchdowns the game before to Ajayi. I just think if he gets the work, which is the issue, he did not get the work before the bye. It was a very bizarre game where Flacco was hurt and they were flailing. They almost gave up the game. It was just a very weird week. But before that, he was getting, you know, double-digit big-time carries. And I think if they go back to that, which this is the best matchup for them against the Steelers, I think that he might be decent and will have like 0% ownership. I mean, who's going to be like, you know what, I really want Terrence West this week? Well, zero people.
People now, after they listen to this.
Well, you're welcome. I think that he's a double-digit fantasy point kind of game.
And really?
I think that, yeah. Yeah, at least double digits. Yeah.
We should have a bet on that.
You don't think he's at least going to get like a touchdown and 50 yards?
I think Kenneth Dixon is going to see more work. That's my idea. I'm not saying the Steelers are a good defense.
Could be.
You know, I think Dixon. Dan, can you be the tiebreaker here? Come on, you're awfully quiet over there. Step in.
I got to be honest with you. As big of a fan of Dixon as I was in college, I'm cutting you off.
Nope.
Dixon's not recovered. He's not fully back from that injury. He's really.
Yeah, that's what I've been hearing out of everyone from Baltimore is that it's not happening this week. Now, it's Wednesday. That's why sometimes it's really hard to do these, podcasts. Is that it's like, well, it's Wednesday. You know, the Friday injury report is really when you kind of get down to the nitty gritty, right? And you kind of feel out exactly who's going to be where. Things could change, but yeah, I'm with Dan. I've kind of ruled out Dixon for a large role, at least for this week. And until we hear something different, I want to see him have a small role first. I want to see something before I think that Terrence West is completely out of there. I just think this is a good matchup against the Pittsburgh Steelers. And depending on what happens with Big Ben, again, this is a Wednesday show. Mm-hmm. Supposedly he's going to be back, but this could also be a bunch of
malarkey.
There you go. Because, right. I mean, remember when Garoppolo was going to start and then all of a sudden it was Brissett?
Oh, yeah. I started Jacoby Brissett that week. It was awesome.
Oh, yeah. Your 5 points were awesome. It was terrible that week.
All right.
The one before was great. But, yeah, so I don't know what's going on with him. So there are a lot of question marks, but to me, he's someone that's at least intriguing that zero people are talking about.
Well, and look, to your point, Pittsburgh does give up literally the most fantasy points to running backs on a per game basis. So, again, if you go with West and you're lucky enough that he is the guy, at least for this week, then yeah, I think it'll turn out pretty well. All right, so let's move on to some receivers, Brandon. Who do you got?
I don't know what's going on with Julio Jones' injury. And it's really interesting because I think of Mohamed Sanu, I think probably in the way that we were talking a little bit about Derrick Henry, who, by the way, again, I actually fully support. I just don't support people asking me Twitter questions about should I start Henry or like Terrence West. And I'm like, yo, till Murray's reeled out, come on now. So that's the only reason I brought up those breakaway points. But anyway, Mohamed Sanu is going to have to be involved if Julio Jones is not at 110%. And let's just be honest for a minute. I think it's really important. Julio Jones has three incredibly disappointing games on the season. Now he has 300-yard upside, so of course you never bench him. But let's just be honest. I think that it's okay to be a little frustrated. I think that this week right now, Mohamed Sanu is going to be in the slot against Jude Ajayi-Barima, which, by the way, I had to write out the phonetics for that.
I was going to say, that's impressive.
Yeah, there you go. I checked it out. So far, opposing quarterbacks have a 109.5 rating when throwing towards him.
So not good.
Not good for him. Great for Matt Ryan and Mohamed Sanu.
True.
So I think this is a really good matchup. And last week, obviously, Mohamed Sanu had kind of this breakout. But I think that he's kind of one of those dart throws that I'm okay with, especially with six teams on bye.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, and I think he'll be a pretty good bargain. And look, to your point on Julio, because I was talking about this with a buddy of mine today who was contemplating trading for him. If you take out, say, Jarvis Landry's and Julio Jones' best game this season, meaning Julio's 300-yard game, they're actually averaging the same amount of points in a PPR league, Jarvis Landry and Julio Jones, which isn't a knock on Jarvis Landry. It's just keep in mind that Julio Jones, it's not, at least this season, I mean, except for the one game, been like light years ahead of. It's not like an Antonio Brown in 2015 season where, hey, he could go for 10 for 150 like half the time.
You know, yeah, what I mean? Absolutely. And I think that sometimes when people listen to shows like this or, you know, whatever show on the planet, they get a little frustrated because everyone's like, well, yeah, Julio, obviously. And then they're like, that guy just got me 2 points. And right. I just want to say we empathize with you. And you're right, he did. And sorry, I guess would be my...
that, right. This is just forever. You know? Like, just take this apology just at any time.
Yeah, but you would have been really mad had he had a 300-yard game.
Right. And look, he's one of those guys, at least for this season, you start him no matter what. No matter but what. Just, you know, just like you said, he could get 2 points. Dan, what about you? Who are some receivers that you're looking at this week?
Got a couple guys I love this week. So first I'm going to just start by saying I'm going to go back to that Davante Adams well. We don't know what's going on with Ty Montgomery. He has a sickle cell. I believe. Can you guys confirm what's going on with him with the sickle cell? I don't know too much about that. Have either of you looked into it? What its repercussions are?
Just a little bit. What Stefania Bell was saying and a couple other people, just that, you know, he actually has known about this trait for a while, but that he had some symptoms recently that got really bad. And they do think that it's probably associated with some of his usage, which is bad news for fantasy owners. Yeah. But yeah, it doesn't feel like a lot of people got sickle cell trait this year. I feel like we've talked about it a lot more.
There's an uptick. There's an epidemic on it. I don't know.
I don't know if Ryan Clark's like issues with it has like shown a light on that issue, but yeah, so that's the only thing that I've heard, but it doesn't sound great, and you can't love Randall Cobb's health either.
Exactly. So assuming that either one or both of them are out, this offense is going to run through Adams just like we saw it run through Adams last week. And this is just something you can't avoid on DraftKings. If you have an offense like this that's really just dinking and dunking their way down the field, and again, Adams is also used on the outside too. They've been moving him all over the formation, so he can still make those plays on the outside, those back shoulder throws. Rodgers likes when he's lined up there. But this is a guy who's going to rack up 10 receptions easy. Like, he's done it the past 2 weeks, double-digit receptions. So you can't miss a guy like that on DraftKings. It's somebody who you got to lock into your lineups, in my opinion, at least in cash games. And then my favorite play of this week is easily Dante Moncrief. The reason I love Moncrief so much is not only the matchup, which is tilting in his favor against the Packers defense that really hasn't shown any signs of fielding any capable cornerbacks, but mostly because T.Y. Hilton's banged up. He came back into the game last week, really wasn't himself. He looked gimpy out there. He didn't have any of the explosion. He's been dealing with this injury all year. I feel like he's been kind of pushing it to the side, pretending that everything's all right. But what happens is, just like we saw with Hilton earlier in the year when both Moncrief and Dorsett were out, Moncrief's going to become a target monster. That's what Luck was leaning on Hilton earlier in the year. I think he's going to lean on Moncrief in a big way this week. Moncrief looked totally back to 100%, in my opinion, from my own eyes last week. So I think has that wide receiver one upside, and he's priced like a wide receiver three on both FanDuel and DraftKings.
Well, and to your point, you know, Indy obviously overall hasn't had a great year. They're two games back in a playoff spot. So, it's iffy that they would push him out there too soon, thinking, hey, you know, let's just let him heal first, especially with a hamstring injury. I love your point about Adams. I think I saw where he had 30 targets over the last 2 weeks or something like that. So, the volume is definitely going to be there. So, all right, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, we will get to our fantasy fades for this week.
This is Chris Collinsworth. Be sure to check out the PFF College Podcast, as our experts provide insight on all the league's top stories. Every game, every player, every play. Download and subscribe on iTunes or your favorite provider.
All right, everyone, welcome back. So now let's get to the Debbie Downer portion of the episode. And guys, we are fading this week. Brandon, why don't you start us off? Who are you avoiding this week?
Sorry, Detroit Lion wide receivers. You all have to share an average of 10.9 total receptions on the game.
That's tough.
And there are three of them.
Right.
You know, because Nkwamolen continues to be involved. He's at least getting one or two of those.
Oh, yeah. And probably near the goal line.
Oh, yeah. If they score, it'll be Bolden, because you're welcome, fantasy. But, yeah, so we're talking about four apiece for Tate and Jones, maybe. This is legit scary. I mean, I get it. And you know what? Chicago definitely made them look less competent than they are. Yeah, let's put it that way. But the Vikings just were not prepared for that game. It was a very weird game. If you've watched the Vikings the rest of the season, you knew that that was just a completely out of character, bizarre moment. I think it's very weird that their offensive coordinator, North Turner, quit today out of nowhere, didn't tell the team. And Sam Bradford found out from his wife, because she has notifications from like Bleacher Report or whatever on her phone.
That's
unbelievable. So
it's odd. There's no doubt about it.
Yeah. But I do think that they at home are rather fantastic. I actually think that the Minnesota Vikings Dome is going to be one of the toughest places to play moving forward. Whenever you talk to a team that's come from that establishment, which by the way, it just opened this year, so we're just getting to know that stadium. They say it's one of the toughest environments that they've played in. The fans are rabid. They're the closest to the field out of any National Football League stadium in the entire country. So I think that at home against the Lions, they're going to feast. So I am looking for them to get 10 to 11 total catches between the three of them. And I don't like any of them, especially in DFS. They're just still too expensive for me. Except
well,
for Bolden.
Yeah, to your point, obviously Marvin Jones had that super hot start to begin the season, but hasn't had more than four catches since week four. It wasn't even the last couple. I mean, it's been a month now since Marvin Jones did what he did before. And look, it does coincide with the injuries of Riddick and Ebron. I mean, Ebron came back last week and had 7 for 79. So already more catches than Marvin Jones had in a month.
Well, I read an article too about how Jameis Winston right now has the most yards in the air percentage for his passing yards, right? And actually, Mike Evans is averaging 1.8 yards after the catch. Ah,
oof.
That's terrible. It's under 2 yards. Horrible. The opposite of that is Matthew Stafford. So this dink and dunk, so he is by far having the most percentage of his yards are after the catch. And this dink and dunk is just, it's hard because the defense knows where they're going. They know he is, you know, we always talk about Alex Smith being this, game manager, but Matthew Stafford tied him last year for average depth per target. That's who he is. So yeah. I just think that's the problem is defenses are like, well, we don't have to worry about down the field because he's not really going to air it out to Marvin Jones. He's going to get to Marvin Jones maybe 10 yards out, and then he's going to run it the rest of the way. So as long as I can get to him at 10 yards, it's not going to happen. So even when he does have four catches, it's not going for as far. So it's just unfortunate.
Dan, what about you? Who are some guys you're fading this week?
Yeah, and before I get it, I just want to touch on a couple things. I think Brandon's spot on there with just the entire fading the Lions receivers. I did something on why you should sell Marvin Jones. I think he's kind of still viewed as like that wide receiver one fringe guy, but he's only had double-digit targets twice this season, and he hasn't done it since week three of the NFL season. So like they're completely spreading the ball around. Brandon kind of just broke that down perfectly. I just wanted to kind of give that little target stat. And then the other thing I wanted to say is I've actually been to the new Viking Stadium. I was there for the Giants game earlier this year. And let me tell you, that was the single loudest stadium I've ever been to in my entire life.
See?
And I've been
Confirm.
To the Big House, and I've been Confirm. To the Big House, and I've been to Camp Randall. I've been to a lot of big-time college football stadiums, and then some NFL stadiums as well, but nothing can compare. But for me this week, I'm actually looking to fade two games that I think won't be faded by the public. So I'll kind of save the best one for last. I'll start with one that might be faded by some people, but I'm talking about the Giants and the Eagles. Some people look at this Giants offense and they see a high-tempo team that likes to use a lot of no-huddle at home. And while they're right, that doesn't mean that their offense is going to function at a high level just because they're trying to call a high number of plays. And the Eagles defense has been sound all season. They have that wide nine scheme, and it's delivering a lot of pressure. The Giants have been protecting well on the interior, but they've been awful in pass protection on the exterior with left tackle Eric Flowers and right tackle Bobby Hart. So I think they're going to eat up all day, and that's going to go nowhere. And then the other side of the ball, Carson Wentz, you know, he's only thrown for 300 yards once this season. Do you know he's thrown for under 200 yards three times this season?
Oh, no.
Yeah, it's not
almost like he's a rookie, Dan.
It is like he's a rookie, but I don't blame Wentz for this. I blame the Eagles and their men.
Agreed.
They don't have a single receiver who can get downfield. They don't have a single receiver who can even create separation in the intermediate area of the field. And that's not going to improve against this giant secondary that just got much healthier with Dominique Rodgers-Cromartie and Eli Apple now back at full health. They're going to have both their starting safeties back. So, and Janoris Jenkins has been one of the best corners in the league this year. So this is a matchup that I see ending 13-10, 9-6, something like that. Avoid. And then my other big avoid for this week is just going to be one that everyone I think is going to be in on, and that's 49ers against the Saints defense. They're at home. They're coming off a bye. Everybody wants to get against the Saints defense. People are telling me that they're going to play Kaepernick. Some people are talking about a Kaepernick-Hyde stack. But let me tell you something. This Saints defense has played a lot better in recent weeks, and they're just getting back their top cornerback, Delvin Bro, this week. He said he's at 115%, whatever that means. But whatever the point is, Delvin Bro was emerged as one of our best corners as far as our grades go last season. He's a guy who can really make things difficult for the 49ers offense. Not that they move the ball very well through the air anyway. Kaepernick's completing what, under 50% of his passes or something like that. But this seems like a clear daily fantasy trap for me. So I'm avoiding those two games hard this week.
Well, yeah, so a couple things. On that Saints game, I remember when I was doing the podcast on Sunday, what I found interesting was, because you're right, that defense has actually been improved the last couple weeks. They held Seattle, who usually averaged 64 plays a game, to only, I think, 52 or 54 plays last week. I mean, that's a whole 10 plays less than what they're used to. And you saw what they
Seattle
did.
Seattle also really was horrible.
They were, yes, but if you had to put the two together, Seattle or 49ers offense, I mean, I'm pretty sure people are going to go Seattle at this point.
Yeah.
Right? Okay.
I'll give you that.
And then to your note, Dan, the highest ranking Eagles receiver in receiving yards, it's Jordan Matthews. Care to guess where he ranks?
I can't even imagine, because they haven't had a 100-yard receiver since Darren Sproles did it in week 3.
Right. Brandon, any guesses? Where Jordan Matthews 40th. Ranks on yards. Huh?
40th?
Very close, 38.
Wow.
There you go.
That's their highest one. Jordan Matthews, 419 yards so far.
To be fair, though, they're not trying. His actual targets aren't going anywhere. I mean, their playbook is so gross. I think they're selling everyone on that team short. It's very clear that they're playing the most conservative football, and it makes zero sense. They should have won that game against Dallas, but they're just so scared of Carson Wentz screwing up or something. I don't know what the deal is, but he's being completely hindered by them. I don't think this is Carson Wentz's abilities. I think that he is capable of so much more. I mean, why not throw it? You know what? Who cares? Let Dorial Green Beckham just run down the field a little bit. Let's just try it out. You get an interception, fine, but you got to move the ball. Like, I'm with you. I could go on. I lost it after that game, by the way. I lost it.
Why?
It did. Because I was just so mad that I just sat there thinking, like, I wonder what Carson Wentz would look like if he was on the Cowboys. Like, Dak the Cowboys Prescott? Let Dak Prescott. Nothing against Dak Prescott, but you could just see that this team is behind him. They're letting him play. They're letting him take chances. He got interceptions. He had problems, but he came back. They didn't pull him. They didn't act like, oh, we got to really, you know, shackle you because, you know, we got to win this game. They were like, no, go win this for us. You could tell the Eagles were like, all right, we got to win this game, so you can't do anything. It was just the weirdest coaching I've ever seen for the end of a game where you're trying to win. Anyway, sorry.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, you've got let's face it, you've got a first-year head coach in Peterson. You've got a rookie quarterback. It's not like they're going to be the most seasoned guys out there, you know, that are going to be – they're going to play the traditional route. They just are, because I don't think they probably know better yet. But anyway, all right. Well, that will do it for this episode. We got a lot of good info in for Brandon, Marion Lee, and Dan Schneier. We'll see you next time on the Fantasy Slam.